T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Once again, we just passed Veterans Day, obviously, on the 10th, and we want to pay tribute to all veterans because, you know, every time you take in your freedom, every time you take a breath, every time you get a chance to choose what you want, it's because a veteran gave and sacrificed. And, you know, it's one of those things where we really, it takes a very brave type of person. I would never have the guts to do it. Joining us on the phone right now is Cece Mazik, who's an Army veteran, and we're talking about the disabled American veterans. Cece, thank you for your service.
Thank you so much for having me on your show and taking the time to remember the sacrifices of our brave veterans.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, and you know, every year I try to set this because a lot of people get it confused. There is a big difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day. Veterans Day is the day we celebrate everybody who has given their time. You know, people who have sacrificed. People and veterans, it's not just the veterans. Veterans' families make huge sacrifices as well. But just so people understand what we're talking about, from your perspective, the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day?
Veterans Day, like you stated, is to celebrate those who have served. Memorial Day is to celebrate those who have served and who has passed away.
And it's just, you know, it's that important. So you should always thank veterans. How do you feel about people thanking you as when they see you? What's the best way we can thank a veteran?
You know, I feel proud. The best way that you can thank a veteran, if you recognize that they are a veteran, is to shake their hand it's COVID, give them a fist bump or just congratulate them or just say how proud of you are of them. That will make their day.
And I don't think I can stress this enough. You know, I like to think I'm a brave guy because when there's a sound outside at night, I grab a bat and go out and investigate so my kids don't and wife don't have to. There's a big difference there than going into a theater of combat, which the United States has been in a theater of combat since, you know, we've done it several times. You know, I grew up in the 80s where it was kind of a time where everyone was geared up for a conflict, but there wasn't a lot of it going on. But since the Gulf War, and especially since 9/11, we've been in a state of conflict all over the world. It is a different challenge to know you're in a situation that, you know, your life's on the line. But it's such a different mindset for veterans because, you know, obviously, I'm sure you still have fear, but the bravery involved in what you're doing for and supporting your fellow soldiers, it's going to be a very special feeling. Talk about that.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's a very dangerous job. And sometimes when serving men and women, we put our lives on the line, and unfortunately, we do get hurt. That's an unfortunate thing. But the amazing thing about it is after your injury and the recovery process and the organizations that you can connect with to help you through the recovery process, you know, organizations like DAV, Disabled American Veterans, has helped tremendously with me and my son's education and health care benefits, and it has opened many opportunities and doors, like getting involved in women veterans retreats and had the connection. It connected me with a broader community of support. So DAV and organizations like that really help veterans.
And I want to promote to everybody that they should go to DAV.org. That is the Disabled American Veterans website. It has information about how to support those who have put themselves in a situation where they were defending our country and got injured. Let's talk about what you had to deal with, because you were paralyzed from the waist down in a parachuting jump, but you rebuilt your life. I mean, it has to be something that is very difficult, but I would love to get into your head to figure out how you processed such a huge loss and turned it into a positive thing for you moving ahead. Talk about that.
Sure. I was a sergeant first class with the United States Army Reserve. First, I was in the reserve. Then I transferred to active duty in 1997. And initially, I joined for one purpose, and that was to help pay for college. But over time, I came to love the Army and its mission. I mean, I fell in love with it, the camaraderie. I was with the 82nd Airborne Division in North Carolina, and after 6 years of jumping and becoming a jump master, on November 26, 2003, the unthinkable happened. It was just doing a routine jump. The wind caused my parachute to collide with a fellow jumper, and I didn't have time to have a proper landing. So when I hit the ground, I was paralyzed on impact. And the doctors told my mother that I would never walk again. But when my mom told me this information, all I could think about as a single mom was my one-year-old son.
I would imagine.
And how this diagnosis, yeah, would impact him. So my son Tristan, he was my reason to fight and never give up.
Amazing. And again, you know, you, everybody who has the ability to get up out of bed takes it for granted. It has to be a stunningly... You must go through so many emotions because, you know, especially as a single mom, you want to be able to support your son. And I'm sure you went through so many series of fears and oh my gosh, what's going to happen? But you've turned it. I mean, you've got a heavy resolve here and turned it into something positive. But how did you get there? I mean, that, and this is the situation we're talking about, because veterans are in these situations. They deal with these life-altering injuries.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, it's two things, two big things for me. Active rehabilitation definitely plays a major role in your recovery process. I know for me, it has done an amazing thing. And the second thing is to find a great support system like family, friends, and a service organization like DAV. For myself, athletics has always been a part of my life. I've always had that competitive spirit and wanted to remain active after my injury. So by attending things like the Disabled Veteran Winter Sports Clinic, which is co-hosted by DAV and the VA, it got me back into my athletics. And I mean, I did things like ski and rock climb, scuba dive, things that I never thought I would be able to do.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that competitive spirit took me all the way to the 2012 Paralympic Games in London.
It's such an amazing thing to me that you had dealt with, you know, something which would cause so many people to just go into a shell. But what you did is really discovered what you really could do. And you accomplished things after your paralysis that you had never accomplished when you were fully ready to go.
Right.
That's amazing.
That's why I would never change a single thing. You know, being in this wheelchair, everyone looks at me sometimes and they say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, don't be sorry for me. I am blessed. Really.
What? So you competed in the Paralympics. What event did you compete in?
The javelin was my discipline.
Wow.
Believe it or not, I never picked up a javelin. During high school and all of my basketball playing and cheerleading and track and field, I never picked up a javelin.
Wow. And you ended up competing. That is an incredible thing. Tell me the camaraderie you had in that room, because obviously when you get to Paralympics, there are people who have all dealt with what would be, to think of would be a life-changing and an unthinkable situation, which suddenly you've got a bunch of like-minded people who are dealing with disability, but also finding out what they're all about and not letting this it stop you. I mean, how did it feel to compete in the Paralympics? That must have been incredible.
It was so liberating. I'm telling you, just to put on yet another uniform representing my country, you know, when I could not complete the mission of on active duty, so putting on another uniform, it was just an amazing experience in itself.
I would imagine that it's going to be a little unique, because most of the time when you're going against someone in a competitive situation, you're like, I'm going to wipe this person out. But in that situation, every competitor must have been so incredibly proud of each other, no matter what the outcome was.
We were. I made lifetime friends. Lifetime friends.
Incredible. Tell me a little bit, and one of the things that I think that, people seem to forget is, you think to yourself, well, I've got a life-altering injury, my life's over. Well, guess what? So many people, so many members of the military actually lose their lives. And those, no matter who, what the situation of, for those who are impacted by life-altering injuries, you're alive and you're able to represent, you're able to support the families of those who didn't survive, you're able to support others who are injured, and you're able to lean on the military, and especially in particular the disabled American veterans. And again, that website, dav.org, there's so much that, obviously changes, but there's so much you can still do and support. Talk about that a little bit, because there's the camaraderie and brotherhood of the military, that has to be something that will always be there.
Yeah, always be there. And my advice to all veterans is to actually build that support system of family and friends in a great veteran service organization like DAV. It can help you connect and continue on with your journey to succeed in life. I know it has helped me tremendously, because DAV has been supporting disabled American veterans and their families for the last 100 years. So it's an amazing charity that you can count on to be there when you need them.
And again, we're here at Radio.com in Boston. This is New England Lifestyles. I'm Mike Mullaney, and that's CZ Mazik, who is an Army veteran, suffered a disability, but has never let it stop her. And we're here to support the disabled American veterans. Again, DAV.org. And, we want to encourage people to make a donation to support this organization, because they do so much with supporting folks who are, dealing with new challenges that they never assumed that would come about. But there's, you go to dav.org and there's ways you can support them. There's volunteer opportunities. You can become an advocate. And you can become a member just to support them by doing that as well. And again, if you're a veteran who needs support, go to dav.org. I guess there's a new documentary airing about how veterans have been able to overcome challenges. Talk about this, which is coming up on the Military History Channel, which is absolutely great channel. I mean, as a guy who loves gear, I watch that stuff. It is so amazing to watch that channel.
Yeah, it's all about learning about our nation's history and supporting disabled veterans. And viewers can watch this newly released documentary chronicling the evolution of 100 years of veterans' recovery from war, airing on the Military Channel this week on demand. Please tune in. You're in for a treat.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, talk about your son. Obviously, when this happened, just a little one, I get a figure he's just about ready for college. Talk about the relationship you have with him and what he thinks of mom.
Just imagine having one child. Yes, and he's 18.
Wow.
He's a mama's boy. He calls me mommy.
Nothing the matter with that.
yes. He is currently in college. I took him in September. And guess what? I thought I was going to experience empty nesting, but I'm really not, because he's always home.
Oh, that's
he
a good thing.
He comes home every weekend.
Where does he go to college?
He goes to Winthrop University in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Very nice.
An hour away from me.
I have a freshman in college, too, and I'm not nearly as strong as you, because she's far away. I don't see her much. It's an amazing thing. He's going to be so proud of you.
Yes, he's a very quiet child, but he is. He is. He is. He suffers from only child syndrome.
There's nothing matter with that.
All the time.
That's okay. That develops yes. a great relationship. And, you know, and again, you know, we want to talk about supporting the disabled American veterans. Again, the website, dav.org. This organization, what are some of the things they help folks with? Because, again, if people don't understand, there are organizations set to help out, and this one in particular really does a ton of work for those who are dealing with some disabilities. Tell me a little bit about what they've done to help you in your journey.
Yes, DAV has helped me with my education and also my son's education, health care benefits. They have done the unthinkable. DAV, it provides free professional assistance to veterans to get health care and disability benefits they have earned. And just know that DAV also helps active duty transition successfully to civilian life. So it's an awesome thing.
And that's one of those things where people, you know, it's funny. I've done a lot of work with veterans. I remember there's a gentleman I've interviewed a couple of times from the SEAL Future Fund where he talked about, you know, getting out as a Navy SEAL and getting back to regular life and having a really hard time adjusting because he was so used to sacrificing and always being on an intense mission. That transition is sometimes challenging for those getting out of the military. And there's a lot of those little challenges that show up, aren't there?
It is. It is. It just takes time. The more that you get out there and expose yourself and find a great support system, the better you'll do with that transition, because I went through it as well.
Yeah. Well, again, the website, dav.org, and again, the impact of disabled American veterans, $21 billion plus in earned benefits awarded to those who have been injured, over 600,000 rides to medical appointments, a million plus veterans have been helped out each year. That's such a great thing, dav.org. And again, CeCe Mazik, Army veteran, disabled, but never let it hurt you, never let it slow you down. You've achieved so much, and you're still advocating for those, so great stuff. Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you.
All right, great. CeCe, I appreciate your time. That is such a great story. Thanks for joining us here at Radio.com in Boston. This is New England Lifestyles, and I'm Mike Mullaney, your host. We want to shine the spotlight on a bunch of organizations because, you know, as this pandemic, we hear about a vaccine, but the reality is it's not there. We're spiking in cases. It really is, you know, we've had 2 weeks of every single day being the highest recorded day in history of positive tests in the country. It is a big problem, but it also impacts folks in a variety of ways. One of the key people it impacts is nonprofits and organizations trying to make a difference because they really have to redo the way they approach the world. One of the organizations that has been making a huge difference in New England for a long, long time and all over the country is the Salvation Army. And joining us on the phone is the local director of the efforts of the Salvation Army, Major Marcus Guggenheimer, and it is a pleasure to have you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, Mike.
This year has been really something else. The reality, though, is Salvation Army has not said, well, there's nothing we can do. You guys have actually doubled your effort. A lot has happened with Salvation Army since March. Talk a little bit about how your organization has mobilized since this pandemic struck.
Yeah, so early March, the Salvation Army, along with everyone else, you know, heard about this virus that was now encroaching upon Massachusetts and New England, and quickly we pivoted our service delivery to really try to maintain safety in all the service. So moving from congregate meals to to-go meals, moving from choice food pantries to prepackaged food pantry boxes. And so during the time of COVID, our COVID response starting in March to this date, we've served over 13 million meals across the Commonwealth.
That's a lot of meals.
Need. Yeah, some of those who have been infected by the virus and some who were affected by the virus in loss of income. And through providing meals at COVID-positive hotels to prepared meals for school children to boxes of food for families. The Salvation Army has been heavily engaged across the Commonwealth, helping to meet that most basic need.
And as we talk today, I'm going to make sure that we get the word out that if you want to get information about how to make a difference, including making a donation, because donations needed more than ever for these organizations making a difference for those in need, Massachusetts.SalvationArmy.org is the way that brings you right to Massachusetts. You can find a center, punch in your zip code, it brings you right there. And, you know, that's the way you can really support the organization. SalvationArmyMA.org/give is where you can make a donation directly. We know that it's the holiday season. Well, a couple of ways. Number one, Christmas music starts playing. But the other way is the Red Kettle. Is that something that's happening this year? And if not, what are you doing instead?
Well, we are hoping that for the 129th year that the Salvation Army Kettle will be out there collecting donations, but we are fully aware of the surge in COVID cases and want to do all that we can to help keep people safe. So we hope to have some kettles out, but they'll be far less than what you're accustomed to seeing. And so the Salvation Army nationally has started a Rescue Christmas campaign as a way to help us to recoup some of the funds that could potentially be lost. We're looking at, you know, potentially 50% loss on kettle collections nationwide, and really an increase of about 155% of the amount of individuals that will be serving this holiday season. And so if you see a Red Kettle, please give generously, but there are other opportunities to give. As was mentioned, SalvationArmyMA.org is a great way to go and make a gift. And then there's also a text to give option, texting Rescue Christmas to 41444.
And is that an automatic amount that you deduct when you do that, or do you enter in an amount?
The donor can enter in whatever amount that they want to give.
All right, great. And again, you know, we're talking about an organization that, again, as you mentioned, has been around for a long, long time. For those who don't know what the Salvation Army is all about, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, the origins of Salvation Army and what you guys do day to day? Because the programs you run, the things that you do, it really is pretty amazing. So give us a little background, because we've all heard of Salvation Army, but let's hear about what you're actually doing day to day. It makes such a big difference.
The Salvation Army was founded in London in 1865 and started moving around the world very quickly, coming to the United States, coming to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with our first location in Massachusetts now 137 years ago. And so the Salvation Army, as I said, is international. We're in 132 countries, providing help and hope to those in need, motivated by our love for God is our motivation and our understanding that He wants us to serve our neighbors in need. And so the programming that is manifested through that service looks different in every community, because is designed to meet the needs of that community. So across the Commonwealth, we have locations with, you know, we have homeless shelter, we have a teen shelter, we have child care centers. And then at every location, we have feeding services and ministries, rent and utility assistance, all to try to help meet those most basic needs, while at the same time, through educational programming and life skills programming, to help to provide that hope for a better tomorrow, in conjunction as well, of course, with our spiritual and denominational ministries.
Yeah, you know, it's, if you look back, you know, there's no way around the fact that if you look back at Jesus when he was on earth, no matter what your perspective on Jesus is, he was a guy who went and helped those who were in the most need, the lepers, you know, people like that. So it's the message of helping those who are in the most in need is a key thing of virtually any religion, no matter what religion you practice, that, you know, taking
Amen.
Care of those in need. It's a great, great point. And again, we're talking about the Salvation Army today. The Salvation Army is just, they've done so much over the years to help just about everybody. It is, you know, you think about the Red Kettle, but it's so much more. You know, the emergency disaster services, which are out there, such a key part of so many things happening, where you show up and you lend a hand. And you know, there's no way around the fact that what we're dealing with now is a disaster. It's a disaster for so many folks. I mean, 10,000 people have already died in Massachusetts. You look at the number of those who have lost their jobs, which is overwhelming. You look at small businesses, which are just taking it on the chin. I mean, I can't imagine how restaurants are going to survive through what we're dealing with, because even if the green light is given to have them open, I know that my wife and I have not sat in a restaurant since March, and we were frequent restaurateurs. It's a mindset which we're hoping to get beyond. You know, you pray for a vaccine which can help us move ahead, but at the moment it is not here. The need is here, and the holiday seasons are here. So again, you know, what we need to do is try to find a way to make a difference. You know, if you're in a position that you are able to help, it's now needed more than ever. And again, Salvation Army doing a whole bunch of stuff. And again, this whole Rescue Christmas campaign has really been something special. I mean, you're doing this across the board. And, you know, tell us a little bit about how you pivoted. I mean, how does an organization pivot from this is what we do to how are we going to adapt now?
Well, like I said, the Keto effort is, this would be the 129th year of Keto collections. And so there's a deep and rich heritage. And this is, you know, the way that we've raised funds for so long, but recognizing the context that we are in with a global pandemic, you know, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
And this is a case where that is very apt. As we needed to look, how can we strengthen our digital fundraising efforts? And the whole idea of Rescue Christmas, I think, is so applicable. It's not only, you know, the food to put on a table for a Christmas meal or even a Thanksgiving meal, but we think of the joy that accompanies the Christmas season, and families that are struggling to decide, are they going to pay the rent, or are they going to have food on the table, or are they going to have toys and clothes for their child for Christmas? And we're hoping, with all of the challenges that 2020 has brought to so many, that at least there can be some of that joy at the end of the year as we celebrate the Christmas season in a way that might bring a feeling of that sense of normality and comfort.
Yeah, in a year that there's none of it. And again, if you're just tuning in to radio.com, I'm Mike Mullaney. This is New England Lifestyles. And we're talking to Major Marcus Guggenheimer from the local efforts of Salvation Army, Massachusetts Division. It's amazing that you have distributed more than 13 million meals since March. But that's what you do. And, you know, this year, as we mentioned, there is the Rescue Christmas campaign, which provides a whole different assortment of opportunities for you to give. And, you know, again, you're going to start seeing the red kettles now coming up. And that's one of those things where you see them every year. And, you know, one of the things, the challenges that I've seen over the years is that I used to carry cash before, but now with the iPhones and credit cards, virtually nobody carries that much cash. Or some people do, but I certainly don't. So it's nice that there's a lot of different opportunities to give. So one of the things is the enlisting in Love's Army with a sustainable monthly gift of $25 a month. That's something where you just say, look, I can put aside $25 a month to help the organization. And that is a vital part of your fundraising is the monthly givers, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and that opportunity, again, is available at SalvationArmyMA.org. You know, we recognize that there are retail stores that have closed, that there's going to be significantly less foot traffic at stores, and most people are reporting, you know, less use of cash in general, and then with the pandemic, even less so. So we anticipate that even when there are kettles that we can safely put out with all the safety protocols, that income is going to be down. And so for those who have the means and are able to contribute through online or through texting, we certainly appreciate that support, and it'll go a long way in helping our neighbors in need.
Although I see you can donate digitally with Apple Pay or Google Pay at any red kettle. That's kind of cool.
Yes, that's something new that started last year, and another opportunity to to pay without cash in the pocket in a touchless manner.
Wasn't aware of that. That's good stuff. And again, we had mentioned a little earlier the Rescue Christmas text. So if you have an iPhone or any smartphone, just text Rescue Christmas to 41444. You can do it in any denomination you think of. And one of the other things is Amazon Alexa. You can say, hey, Alexa, donate to Salvation Army and specify the amount, and you could do it that way as well. That's pretty hip.
Absolutely. Any way that we can help people make it easier to contribute to the Salvation Army, that we might be able to pass that blessing on to families that so badly need it.
Yeah, and you can just go to the website, rescuechristmas.org, to donate, which is a good thing. But again, you know, the information you will need, we want to give the website again, salvationarmyma.org. And again, you know, there are 7,600 centers of operation around the country. And it was listed as America's favorite charity by the Chronicle of Philanthropy, which is a great thing. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
This is that season. You know, it means so much to people. You know, one of the things that we're seeing with Christmas music and stuff, if you go to the streaming charts, the things people want are, you know, it's not the contemporary Christmas. It's the old-time Christmas. It's the Bing Crosby's. It's from a simpler time. That's what people are looking for more than ever this year. And when you think of a simpler time, back when Bing Crosby was the biggest guy going in the 1930s, guess what was on in the street corners with the red kettles? Salvation Army was doing it way back then, too, weren't you?
Absolutely. It's a part of the Christmas Americana experience.
Yeah, it really is. So, again, Salvation Army, MA.org is the website for the local efforts of Salvation Army, organization which has done so much over the years. Relief provides things to anybody who is in need. It's a great organization. But this year, again, they expect you could lose as much as 50% of what you guys pull in. So we're asking folks to be generous. When you see the red kettles, you can text 41444. Just text Rescue Christmas there. And you can, and again, stressing the point that Apple Pay and Google Pay is accepted at the red kettles, which is great stuff. So thank you so much for your efforts, sir. Major Marcus Guggenheimer, again, SalvationArmyMA.org. I appreciate everything you do, sir, and hopefully you guys will have a good season in a season which is challenged by one of the biggest obstacles we've seen in many years, but we are going to get through it together.
Yes, we will, and thank you very much, Mike, and to the station for your support of the community organizations that are making a difference.
I appreciate your time, sir. Have a great day.
You too.
Again, here at radio.com in Boston, I'm Mike Mullaney. It's New England Lifestyles, and there's a lot of opportunities out there. You know, we're at a time where a lot of folks are out of work. You know, it's unprecedented how many folks are out of work. And, you know, finding jobs is challenging, and finding jobs is even more challenging if you face disabilities. Joining me on the phone right now is Kate Brouse. She is with an organization called NTI, and it is nice to speak to you today. Thank you for joining us here at radio.com in Boston.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I love being able to share information about NTI and what we can do to help people with disabilities across the United States, even though we are headquartered in Boston.
Well, it's nice. We like to support the hometown team. We like this. So there are a lot of organizations trying to work to support folks. I mean, at this stage of the game, I think everyone needs support. But there are some specific groups which, unfortunately, have run into some real challenges, especially now that so many organizations are closed, people are having to work at home. Tell me a little bit about specifically what NTI is, who your organization is designed to help, and how you help those folks.
Oh, well, that's a lot of information to cover.
Oh, it is.
Let me give that a shot. So NTI actually stands for National Telecommuting Institute. We are a national nonprofit. We were founded in 1995 with the express mission of helping disabled Americans find jobs that they could do at home. And back in 1995, having a remote workforce was basically unheard of. So we've been doing this for a long time. We helped pioneer remote work, and we're very proud of that. Because this is our 25th year in existence, last year as a company, we got together and our board of directors spoke, and they said, you know, what is it that we can do to be able to help more people than we have been right now? And so as of the end of last year, in addition to helping people who were disabled, we have also opened that up to family caretakers of people with disabilities. And so at the beginning of this year, our services, which are free for people with disabilities and their family caretakers, we rolled out that plan and then enter COVID. And so we have been absolutely perfectly placed to be able to help the population that is most at risk because of the current coronavirus pandemic around the world. And so people who might have been able to go to work and have a disability and not have a problem pre-COVID, people, for example, with asthma or cardiac conditions, they might have been able to go to work and not worry about their health. And now those very populations need to stay home because they are at risk for the coronavirus and having serious complications or even death. And so that's a population that NTI can help. We have over 200 jobs available right now that we are hiring for. All of our training is free. So ask more questions.
Well, when it comes down to it, you know, we talk about the idea of, you know, disability, and there are a lot of different folks facing a variety of disabilities. Specifically, NTI, when you talk about those you're assisting, you know, you mentioned those who may have heart conditions or, you know, asthma. What are some of the, you know, are we talking about folks who are facing physical or specific health-related disability?
Yes, right now, if you have any kind of a documented disability and you have a doctor who is willing to, you know, assign a note for that, then yes, we can help you. And it doesn't matter whether that's PTSD or agoraphobia or cancer or you have a mobility issue, we can help any of those people. There are just a couple of things that people who are interested would need to know before they apply for our services. All of the positions that we do currently offer require you to do work on the phone because they are remote positions. And so you need to be able to have a quality phone voice. You need to be comfortable being on the phone. You need to have basic typing skills. I think our minimum right now is 20 words per minute. Some of the positions that we offer have a higher requirement, but the basic is 20 words per minute. So it's not like you have to have flying fingers. And you do need to have some level of computer literacy to do our jobs. Now, if any of those skills aren't in place, we do have self-paced training that you can complete through our online classes to help you get those skills in place. But if that's not something that you're willing to do or you don't already have the inclination to have those, then our jobs probably would not be the best fit for those people at this time.
It's interesting, though, the idea that, you know, back in the day, if you had, you know, for example, say you were wheelchair bound, it limited a lot of the jobs you could do. But so much we're seeing now since the outbreak of COVID has been that the world has become a remote work location. I mean, virtually, you know, even in this radio station, for example, normally we have 80 people in the building over the course of four radio stations. There are about 10 of us in the building now. Everyone else is working remotely. It's amazing how quickly you can adapt to remote doing just about every job. And, you know, the things you laid out, you know, the ability to type, the computer literacy, it's almost as if just about everyone has become expert at that due to this, you know, unfortunate pandemic. People have really become a lot more savvy. I mean, I never knew how to do a Zoom call before. Did you? Maybe you did, but I didn't.
Actually, I did. And that is because I do work remote and I did pre-COVID. But, you know, that comment that you made really is true. And so for people who use assistive devices like wheelchairs for mobility to get around, they've been facing issues of trying to be able to find work or do travel to and from work and all these different things for years. They've been asking for the simple accommodation of being able to access things through video or at home. And all of a sudden, on a dime, businesses had to turn and say, wow, you know, we can do this. And so that's a really important issue for the disability community in general. And the hope is that we won't pivot back when these COVID issues go away. The disability community is really advocating and very hopeful for a new world where those accommodations that could have been provided prior to COVID will continue to be provided, because it's become blatantly obvious that there isn't a real technological issue why people cannot work from home. There isn't an issue why you have to commute to the office every day if you have a mobility issue. And so that's something that NTI has been aware of, and now we continue to advocate for that. And something that we are seeing that makes us very hopeful is some companies with whom we have tried to partner in the past and asked them to provide at-home jobs that said, no, it's just not something that we can do at this time. They're now back knocking on our doors saying, hey, remember when we said this wasn't a good fit? Well, now we need people to work remotely. And they know that NTI has a pool of talent, all people with disabilities, all trained to work remotely, all who know how to set up their home office for success, because that's something that NTI trains people to do. Again, all of our training is remote. We do work across the nation, even though we are headquartered in Boston. So if any of your listeners have friends or family that live outside of the area, you know, we hope that they can get in touch, because we have jobs across the nation for all these kinds of people. And we are, as fast as we can train people, we are able to put them into jobs right now. It's quite exciting.
And again, if you're just tuning in to radio.com here in Boston, this is New England Lifestyles. I'm Mike Mullaney. We're talking to Kate Brous, who is with the organization NTI. And the website, for those who would like to get information about the organization, is nticentral.org. And you guys have been getting a lot of nice press. I'm sitting here on your media thing, and there's a nice article in the New York Times about call centers turning to folks with disability, and you know how a TV one from New York that talked about the pandemic helping people with disability find work. So it's nice to see that this has become a positive story in the midst of one of the most tragic stories the country's really in the world has dealt with in many, many centuries.
You're right. It's been really exciting, and we at NTI are absolutely thrilled that we are able to help more people than ever before. We, you know, obviously are not happy that it took a pandemic for us to be able to turn the corner to help a larger population, but we are very happy that we are well placed at this time of national and even world crisis to be able to help people who really need those jobs at home in order to stay safe and continue to have their bills paid. That right now we are placed to be able to help them with our free training and job placement services.
I would imagine that those who deal with disabilities, sometimes the disabilities come out of nowhere, you know, and it takes a while for people to process that life is going to proceed in a new direction. The fact that you have, you know, training and stuff like that is great. Now, the idea of how people can work through that. I mean, if you are someone who has, you know, is dealing with some type of a disability, what should they know about the organization prior to reaching out?
I love that question. You're right. And a lot of the people that we are able to help are people who had a sudden onset of some sort of disability, whether it was a sickness or an accident that led to it. Many of them have been out of the workforce for between 3 and 5 years, sometimes even longer. And they're unsure whether they can go back to work and whether working is for them. And NTI's mission is designed to help those people really look into the options that are available and to figure out if going back to work is something that they can manage with their disability. Everyone who registers for our services at NTI is paired with an individual job coach and mentor that is available from day one all the way through the process until they have a job offer, start their first day of employment, and then for the first 30 days. And so this person is available to answer any of the questions. And these experts and job coaches that work for NTI, they all have personal experience working with a disability and coaching people with disabilities. Many of them have advanced degrees in psychology and psychiatry, so that they are well placed to be able to answer those questions that people have, whether it's something about an accommodation or how do I, you know, manage the fact that I get really tired halfway through my shift, or what do I need to tell my employer to help them understand that I need to have time off for physical therapy or doctor's visits, any myriad number of questions. Our job coaches are there to help all the way through the process from day one, all the way through the process of training, interviewing for the job, getting a job, and the first 30 days on the job. And so that has made something that's something that really sets NTI apart from other organizations that may offer job services, is that our mission at the end of the day is to help you be successful all the way through the process, not just here's some information about local jobs that are available, good luck. We really are there to hold your hand as much or as little of the way as you need it. And if you have all the skills in place and you complete our training in 1 week and can apply for a job and never need to talk to that job mentor, we consider that success. And if you need that job mentor to hold your hand for 8 or 9 months before you are able to have the confidence and the skills to go for that job interview, well, we're there with you all that way as well.
I know that some of the organizations you work with, you know, people say, well, okay, so I'm making calls and stuff, but where am I going to be working with? You have some great partners, employee partners, employer partners that the folks you place work with. Why don't you give us some of those?
Well, there's some that I can say and there's some that I can't. One of our longest term clients is a large retailer in the Midwest called Meijer. They actually were kind of like Walmart before Walmart was around, and that they provided all the different things under one roof in the store. And Meijer has been a really great partner for us. We've been a partner for about 12 years now, and they trust us so much to be able to provide the people that they need that are trained, that they don't ever bother anymore to even interview the people that we think would be a good fit. So, for example, if you go through our training program and you think that the jobs with, you know, being a customer service representative for our employer partner Meijer looks good, and our people internally say, yep, we think that looks like a good fit, we just send you directly to Meijer and you start from day one. They don't even bother to interview. But we also partner with AAA. We actually run a call center that we help staff with our Americans with Disabilities that we have trained for the IRS. We work with a national pharmaceutical company that nice. Has a cancer drug out there, and we have people who answer those incoming calls with questions about the cancer drug. So we have a whole bunch of job positions out there. And like I said, we currently have over 200 open positions. From time to time, we have positions for like IT executives, and we're able to place those people as well. So for your callers, most of the jobs are as call and contact center representatives answering incoming calls, whether that's for people who are needing help scheduling doctor's appointments yeah. or having roadside assistance or questions about insurance or healthcare. We have a wide variety. And so once people complete our training, they're able to look at the jobs that we have available, figure out what is a good fit for them, and then apply for those that they think are of interest.
Well, again, and I like supporting the hometown organization based in Boston. I'm looking at your executive director as a graduate of both Boston University and Tufts, so I like it, keeping it local. Again, if you want to get information, nticentral.org is the website. It sounds like you guys are really making a difference in placing Americans with disabilities in jobs. Again, Kate Brouse, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us here in Boston at radio.com.
Thank you very much. And just let your listeners know, another way to get in contact is by calling our phone number at 877-248-8912, as well as the website nticentral.org.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, joining us on the line right now is Chris Voss. He's written a book called Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Chris, first off, I want to give you kudos because there aren't many books which start off with your child being taken hostage. Kind of wild.
Yeah, my brother at Harvard, Bob Mnookin, thought he had me there, didn't he?
But the way this book is written is it's a wonderful read because you always present these situations which are so compelling to set up each one of the points you make. So kudos to you.
Thank you very much. We try to make the book fun to read and interesting so that it wouldn't be your typical boring business book.
Well, it's definitely not that. So take us a little bit through this. So you're a former FBI hostage negotiator, and, you know, you're saying that you can split it, you know, negotiate anything. And, you know, it's funny, you think negotiating, you think only the, you know, in negotiating a contract or something. But we're constantly negotiating, whether it be in business, whether it be at our work, whether it be at our family. Talk a little bit about the idea of how many different ways negotiations can kind of present themselves.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if yes is in the air, if somebody's trying to get you to say yes, or you're trying to get somebody else to say yes, you're in a negotiation. I mean, the most dangerous negotiation is the one you don't know you're in. In many cases, the other side will be negotiating with you before you even know it. So you probably in 4 or 5 negotiations yesterday, at least. So it's becoming aware of it, and then just becoming aware of how you can influence it. Actually, by getting out of the yes dynamic, get into a how dynamic.
Well, talk a little bit about that. Give me an example of a conversation which you might not even realize is a negotiation, which suddenly becomes one.
I want to get a artificial Christmas tree for the holidays.
That's pretty good.
Or you know, the significant other you love very much, and she wants a real tree. Or somebody's trying to negotiate with you at work to get you to comply, because mostly we think negotiations involve money, where in fact most negotiations don't involve money. They involve time, the most valuable commodity after all this time. The line from the movie Wall Street 2, the only line that I liked in that whole movie, was how important time is. And anytime somebody's trying to get your time, somebody's trying to get you to walk down the hall to talk to somebody else in your office to help convince them to do something, you know, that's a negotiation, getting you to walk down the hall, getting you to take their side. Anytime somebody's trying to get you to do anything, you're in a negotiation. So, yeah, they happen to us every day.
So when I'm talking to my kids at night, and my kid's like, Dad, can I just watch the last 5 minutes of the show? Suddenly you're already engaged in this negotiation.
Right, and, you know, and the first thing that you do every time your kid asks you something is say no. I mean, even before they finish the question. And interestingly enough, as soon as you said no immediately, they keep talking and maybe even talk you into it. And that was because saying no makes us feel protected. We feel like we're in charge. Our kids do this to us all the time. They trigger a no, and then they keep going. So you can use that dynamic in your business interactions. Don't be scared of no. Understand when the other side says no, maybe that opens them up to continue the negotiation.
And it really comes down to the fact that interpersonal relationships and interpersonal communications always come down to some form of negotiation or another. You know, in this book, you talk about how a failed hostage negotiation forced you to reevaluate the FBI negotiation strategy. Tell me how that happened.
Well, you know, we did everything that we knew how to do. I mean, I was running a program at the time, and I knew right up to when things went bad. And actually, the hostages that got killed were killed in a botched rescue attempt. We just happened to think they were going to come out sooner. If we did everything we knew how to do, then I just felt like we got to get better. We got to learn more. And that's really when I started looking outside, and I ended up at Harvard Law School's negotiation course. And when I went through that, we just decided we were doing the same stuff. I mean, my professors that I learned from there, they saw it before I did. We were hostage negotiation, business negotiation, same strategies, same dynamics, just different stakes.
It's kind of amazing because over the course of your time with the FBI, you were involved with over 150 kidnapping cases, all kinds of stuff. It has to be pretty intense, but it's amazing that the negotiation techniques that are used in those situations really kind of translate themselves. But, I mean, when you were doing this kind of stuff, it has to be amazing to have so many people's lives in your hands when you're doing something like that. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, trying to get yourself in a place where you just saw these as negotiations, and, you know, when somebody's life is in your hand, it can get you rattled, and you can be rattled, and the other side's not the least bit rattled. And coming to understand that what the other guy was feeling was a lot more important than I was feeling made me a better hostage negotiator, makes you a better business negotiator. I mean, kidnappers are businessmen. They're international commodities dealers, and they only care about getting paid. I mean, that sounds like a lot of people out there, right? So once you understand that how the other side feels about this is a lot more important than how you feel, actually, you gain a huge advantage.
We're on the line with Chris Voss, who's the author of the book, Never Split the Difference, an amazingly well-read and compelling book, which just talks about the reality of negotiating. And negotiating is everywhere in our lives. And he kind of gives you ideas on how you can, you know, get the upper hand in negotiations. You have a whole bunch of counterintuitive techniques and strategies that you contend give anyone a competitive edge. What are some of those things we can do to gain an upper hand in a negotiation, Chris?
We'll be a lot more willing to ask how. I mean, the great way of saying no, I mean, the magical way to say no is, how am I supposed to do that? And saying that horrifies us on a regular basis because we're scared the other side is going to say, well, because you have to. Well, actually, that's ultimately where you want to get, but it's probably going to take you two or three times to say that. When they say, because you have to, you know you pushed them as far as you can. But it's the art of pushing the other side as far as you can without pushing them away from the table, because they're still in negotiation at that point in time. Now, what will happen the first time or two you say, how am I supposed to do that, is they're going to stop, and they're going to think, and they're going to hesitate, and they're going to concede. And you're going to find more space, and you're going to find better deals. So that's one of the real keys, being much more willing to say how, because we're afraid that we lay ourselves open, when in fact what we've done is box the other side in.
That's pretty interesting. One of the things in that, one of the chapters of the book is called Beware Yes and Master No. Now, obviously, you're asking, you know, them to say, you know, explain how I'm supposed to do that. But the yes and no stuff, how, why is it so important to, you know, beware saying yes and really mastering how to say no?
Well, people try to take us hostage with yes every single day. I mean, this whole nonsense about the yes momentum and, you know, get people to say yes to a lot of little things in a row and they'll say yes to the big thing. I mean, we get that pulled on us every day 4 or 5 times. If I say to you, do you want to make more money? I mean, that's a setup yes. You know that I got something in mind. And you've immediately got your guard up. So getting out of that dynamic is really huge, and also stopping doing it to other people immediately changes the dynamic as well.
One of the things you talk about is bending the other side's reality. Well, talk about that and how that works, not only in big picture, but also in the little picture. Like I personally am right now, my daughter has been texting me all morning. She wants a dog, and she wants me to come home early today, and I've already told her I cannot, and she's continuing to push. So I'm like, wow, I'm already in a negotiation this morning.
Well, you are, and bending reality is about understanding how much the fear of loss distorts our perception. I mean, it's the closest thing to an academic principle that I pulled in, because this is a practitioner's book. I mean, this book is designed to help you start getting better and making a difference immediately. But fear of loss is huge, and it's actually a Nobel Prize-winning behavioral economics concept, in that loss thinks twice as much as an equivalent gain. So if I can pose something as a loss, there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to change your mind a lot quicker than if I propose it as a gain. Loss just stings us so much harder. It's actually almost dangerously powerful once you wrap your mind around that.
I know that you're always a big advocate of bargaining hard. And, you know, one of those situations is people sometimes forget that they're in the upper hand in a situation. A good example of that is if you're going to buy a new car. You're the one who's going to make this gigantic purchase. The person you're talking to at those dealerships, they're not the ones who, you know, they need your business. So they need you. And people go in feeling weak in those situations. You always talk about bargaining hard in this book. Talk about how that manifests itself in a variety of different ways.
Well, yeah, and you bargain hard with a tactical application of empathy. And I know empathy makes people fall asleep, and that's why we talk about it in a tactical way. I mean, let's understand, if I articulate your position before you articulate it, I leave you with nothing to say. And so when I bought my truck, I'm so in love with my salsa red pearl Toyota SUV. I mean, it's the sexiest color you ever saw. I fell in love with it from the moment I saw it. And instead of having a salesman tell me, you know, you love this car, you think it's beautiful, I said, look, I got to tell you something. I love this truck. This is the most beautiful truck, and it is worth way more than what I'm going to offer you for it. And here's my offer. That left him with nowhere to go. I'd taken away all of his arguments, and I bargained really hard by tactically articulating what it was that he was going to say before he said it. Left him nowhere to go.
In the course of your time, you've negotiated with some of the toughest folks there are in horrendous situations. What are some of the... can you pinpoint one particular time where you just said this is one of the toughest negotiations and you still came out okay?
Well, we had a serial kidnapper, serial killer that had kidnapped a guy in the Philippines. And we didn't know just how dangerous and deadly this guy was at the time. You know, I had a feeling we were dealing with someone who was a really dangerous adversary. And, you know, he kind of used a classic CEO jargon with us, too. A decision maker, when you talk to a decision maker on the phone, a real important person on the other side, they're going to say we, they, and them all the time. They use plural pronouns. You can't get them to go I, me, my to save their life because they know how it evades decision making. And this guy did that. You know, so he was a really dangerous guy, and he always talked about the rest of the group and how dangerous everybody else was. And when we asked him an open-ended question that got him to completely drop his guard so much that he literally said over the phone under his breath, wow, nobody ever dealt with me like this before. And we had the upper hand, and he was a killer, and we got our hostage out.
Pretty amazing stuff. Again, the book, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Again, one of the best reads I've had in such a long time, because you use so many great examples. And, dude, you've been through some crazy stuff. Seriously.
Yeah. It was a wild ride, and we wrote the book to make it a fun and interesting read that you could apply right away. I mean, I wanted you to be able to read this book and enjoy it, you know, not have it suck the life out of you like reading a dictionary, but actually be able to apply it and make a difference right away.
Well, again, you're now the founder and principal owner of the Black Swan Group, a consulting firm. It's going to be a great thing to not only have a thriving company and understand the negotiation. Every time someone comes in and say, hey, I need to hire you, you know how to bring that. But the book itself, just such a great read. Again, Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Thank you so much for joining us here in Boston today. Great stuff, and I really encourage anyone to read this. It's such a fun read.
Thanks, Mike. A pleasure being on with you.